Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
Congratulations. On behalf of the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, and the schmoes know, you are now a member of the Jedi Alliance. May the Force be with you, always.
Hello there, Jedis! Welcome to another episode, episode 22 of Jedi Alliance, which is a celebration of the greatest saga ever told. What up? My name's Maud Garrett. You can call me Maud One. I am joined on the panel by the prestigious Master Kenobi, Ken Napsok. Hello.
Hey, nice to be here. I'm growing my grey beard out just to join with the light side of
but
the
Force. But I like the mullet so much.
Oh, I had to cut my Jedi mullet.
We are talking about the greatest saga ever told, and it does include, believe it or not, the prequels. This entire episode is dedicated to the pros and the cons of the three movies that kind of set the pace of what Star Wars is about.
When we started the show, my young Madawan, we mentioned the prequels, and we may have put some scorn on them. We may have rolled some eyes. We did try to find some positive things from it, because I believe there are some positive things we can take from the prequels.
Absolutely agree.
They're here forever. But we found, much to our surprise, some of you out there, a lot of you out there, are like, hey, pump the brakes on the prequel hate. I want to enjoy them, and I feel I have the right to enjoy them.
So we are dedicating every... We are not like... There is no stone that we will not force throw out of here, you know? So we're going to cover every part of it. And to help us out with that is a man who knows his prequels back to front, even watched them again over the weekend, and woke up to join us on the show today, which is a feat in itself. Hello, Joseph Scrimshaw.
Hello.
Joseph Scrimshaw, you are a comedian, writer, author of the book Comedy of Doom. You host the Obsessed podcast. You do live shows everywhere, and they can go to josephscrimshaw.com to find out more information. Mm-hmm. But I met you through our mutual friend, Matt Key.
Yep.
And I found a common thread, a common dork love with this man. He's a very funny man, but he knows his stuff, very knowledgeable, and I couldn't think of a better person to bring on to talk prequels.
And for those that are only listening on iTunes, I'm just going to describe Joseph's shirt. It is two unicorns, a black and white unicorn with lightsabers for their horns on the top, battling it out, and the white unicorn with a blue horn saber has lost its right.
Yes, this t-shirt is like wearing Tumblr. It is beautiful and lovely. Thank you to my friend who bought it for me.
So for every guest that we get on the show, Joseph, we have to ask them the top five Star Wars questions. These are the most important questions out there. So starting off with number one, tell us about your first time. The first time you watched Star Wars.
Okay, there's an awkward little pause there. I thought it was a Star Wars podcast. I saw A New Hope in 1978 when it was re-released in Brainerd, Minnesota, which is a tiny, tiny town in northern Minnesota. And R2-D2 is there live.
And
Yes, the R2-D2, the only one. And I remember being terrified that Darth Vader would be there as well. Because I was already culturally aware that, you know, Darth Vader was very frightening. And a three-year-old should not encounter Darth Vader.
That's great that R2 made it out to a north part of Minnesota, not like R5.
So I'm sure they couldn't afford the flash pots to make his motivator explode.
Out of all the Star Wars movies, yes, including the prequels, which one is your favorite?
My favorite is Empire Strikes Back, and I'm sure you get that from most guests.
Yeah.
But one of the things I love about Star Wars, which is why I will defend the prequels, is that all of the movies vary in quality, with the exception of Empire Strikes Back. Mm. And as a comedian, I kind of love the irony that we have built this devotion for almost 40 years based on one movie that is really good, and the rest are all like, well, let's discuss that. But clearly there's something there. And I like Empire because I think it is a really well-made film in every traditional way that we discuss that. But more than anything, I think Empire captures the sort of excitement about new and bizarre things while also still feeling very old, like everything is familiar. Like it's old from a dream, yet exciting as though you've never seen it. And I think that is the true magic of when Star Wars works, when it captures the excitement of the new with sort of the memory of the old.
Which is what they struggle with sometimes with some of the newer shows like Rebels or Clone Wars. I love Clone Wars, but you still struggle to connect. Rebels were kind of sometimes back
Rebels,
and forth
all
on.
They'll do is just throw a TIE fighter out there and just put a, and you're like, oh, I'm back. There we go. But then new characters that you're like, yeah. What's happening again?
Yeah, and then now let's yell at the robot some more.
Yeah, and you got Chopper the fart bot. But what is your favorite character then, Mr. Scrimshaw?
It changes over time. Right now, I'm really into Palpatine and all of his various incarnations.
Does he become older and more bitter and cynical?
Yeah, well, it's either Palpatine or Obi-Wan. And then I just realized I like cranky old men who yell at Luke now for some reason. I don't know why. But I love Palpatine because he is both a good and interesting character played by a good actor and also absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah. And over the top at times and fun.
Oh, good God, yes.
Yeah. Unlimited power! who was early on, maybe, your other choices? And you said
Luke.
Obi-Wan?
Luke and Yoda were, you know, meant a lot to me as I was growing up.
We don't get a lot of Yodas.
No, one.
One Yoda, huh? Which was Riley, I believe, his nickname is Yodi. But Yoda, what drew you to Yoda at any point in your life?
Oh, well, when Empire Strikes Back came out, I related to Yoda because he was a weird little dude who made stupid jokes no one took seriously.
And he'd out
but
by himself
secretly, he was incredibly wise and smart, and no one realized it, and everyone underestimated him. I mean, Yoda is basically a child.
Yeah, yeah, especially when he plays that young person. So it's fair to say that Yoda maybe sent you into your stand-up comedy career?
I think, well, Yoda was one of the first, like, comedy guys I saw. Like, he had some good routines on Dagobah there.
Hey, that's funny, that first sequence.
Yes.
You know? I always like doing the Yoda
yeah,
stick
yeah,
hit.
Yeah, I love that.
Know?
Yeah.
Out of all the quotes, the movie is very, very quotable. Have you latched on to one particular quote that you find yourself using in day-to-day conversation?
The one that I want to use, I hang out with a lot of geeks, so stupid things get used, but the one that I want people to know and remember more is Luke's little line from A New Hope where he says, I care.
Aww.
Yeah.
I don't know why that hasn't, that in
that's
that.
Not taken off at all. If yeah, someone was like, I care, I'd be like, that's sweet. I guess.
I think, too, because it ties – and look, we know what happens with Luke and that being his sister that he's referencing it to. But there's kind of this nice guy finishing last and, hey, don't forget about – I care. That's
yeah,
a great line.
And it's delivered to her. She's walking away. She doesn't hear. Nobody hears. And it's
like, bitch, please.
It's his total Milhouse moment. They're like,
oh, I care.
Everything's coming up Skywalker.
Yeah, exactly.
if you could have a force power, good or bad – whatever extremeness of your choosing, which force power would you want?
I want to say the ability to pull anything to you, but I think that actually makes you lazy.
Yes.
I think that's why Jedi are just constantly dropping crap, because they know. It makes them not take care of their possessions.
Well, last week we had an accidental guest in Josh Tapia, Josh the engineer, and he precisely named that power because he wanted to be lazy. Yeah. So you're right. You're completely right.
So I think I'd want the push, because that's probably... It's rude and aggressive, but it's the most practical. Because sometimes you just need to get crap out of your way.
Be great at a club. clearing droids out.
It's a very aggressive thing. It sounds like you may be turning to the dark side. Mm-hmm. And our final question is, would you?
Oh, I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
He didn't even hesitate.
No. I know. That voice scares me.
Already there.
I think most of us would.
Right. Especially if you move to LA.
It always comes down to emotion. It's like, am I allowed to give in to, you know, emotions like passion? Am I allowed to get laid? I mean, this is a really big thing that we all weigh up here. If we
that's horrible to think of it that way, as sex is the dark side. But no, I think in terms of defending the prequels, if it was a matter of saving my wife's life, and I truly believe that, I would probably do something horrible to somebody else in order to save my wife.
Which is perhaps one of the better scenes in the prequels. So let's dive on into that conversation. We've got to know Joseph as a Star Wars fan. Let's get in now. Joseph, let's start a little bit overall. I said we brought you in here to defend the prequels, which is what you're going to do and you're prepared to do. You're very well researched. But we have a little overall thought on what you think about the prequels as movies, right?
Yes. So I like many parts of them. I don't think that they are good movies in traditional definitions of good movies. I don't think many things can be measured objectively. But as far as they can be measured objectively, there are a lot of problems. But then subjectively, people do enjoy them. I enjoy watching them. I continue to think about them after I've watched them. So I do think there are good things there.
There is, if I was to count up and put it on an Excel sheet, if I look back on my life, there is a distinct possibility that I have seen Revenge of the Sith and Attack of the Clones more than Return of the Jedi.
Whoa. form.
Wow.
Some of it might be hate watching. Some of it might be, let me dig into this. And there's times I'm like, I just want to see Sith. I kind of like the thing at the end. So what I like your point of view is, you're here to defend the right to like these movies, really.
Yes. I feel like they are a family member, like an extended family member, where, you know, like, Uncle Bob's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, he's
you know,
coming back again. Damn it.
He's done some weird things that I can't defend. But, you know, I like Uncle Bob, and he's my family. He's got lightsabers. Come on. That's kind of how I feel
about it. He's got the sound effects. Did you – you were of my similar age group where you were – your first experiences were younger with the prequels.
I was 13 when I watched Phantom Menace in the cinema. Yeah.
I was a young adult, early 20s. Did you, like me, wait in line, get the tickets, do the whole thing?
I had a friend who waited in line, but I went to a midnight showing with
so dark side.
I manipulated people. Yeah. I went with about 20 friends. And, wow. You know, I remember the sort of shell-shocked silence after the film.
I just remember it so differently. I remember everyone being like, whoa, it's back. Yeah, Star Wars is back. It's a thing now. Let's watch it again. But then again, I was young. And we were talking about the fact where a lot of the Star Wars fans are kind of split down the line of whether you are older and watched the originals for the first time or whether you came in sort of halfway through when the prequels were already out. And I kind of feel, being in the younger generation of Star Wars fans, that I do have a little bit more of an affinity with the prequels.
Yeah.
And it took me a good decade to figure out, wait a second,
right.
You know, this isn't all that it cracked up to me. I just love the fact that it was Star Wars, and we're saying that Jake Lloyd being the chosen one and knowing that he was to become Anakin and he was 9 or so when he was on screen is a huge influential thing to happen when you are that young as well.
Yeah.
And this is the first time in any of the Star Wars movies we've had a kid on as a very, very prestigious role, I feel. So for me, it was like, I could be the chosen one. He's like me. I could do what he's doing. And it kind of changed how I looked at Star Wars.
That's a great point that you guys were talking off air before the show. In the first ones, other than Wicket, there was really no children in Star Wars that were present. I mean, I'm running through New Hope. I'm running through Empire.
Yeah, and Wicket could be 47 for all we know. We don't really know how old he is. But I do think there is something about the time that you see them is how you connect with the films. Mm-hmm. And it's been so long since Phantom Menace, I even feel that now because I certainly wasn't a child, but it was in a younger part of my life where my friends would hang out at bars more and drink more. And I find when I watch Phantom Menace, I do have that sort of attachment to that time and what was going on in my life.
Right.
The same way I do about Empire Strikes Back when I was a child.
Yeah. Well, and these toys in front of you here, I put the speeder bikes up just for fun, but these are from the Power of the Force re-release in the late 90s. But these Phantom Menace figures you see here, I waited in line to buy those at Toys R Us.
Yes, I did the same thing.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was at Target months after the film came out and going, oh, there's that action figure from that scene that I really didn't think was good. I can't wait to buy it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I still absorbed all of the Star Wars-ness because I was so excited for Star Wars, even though I didn't actually think Phantom Menace was an amazing film.
Yeah.
Now, you watched them recently over the weekend again. Mm-hmm. Are you still finding that you're taking something else out of these movies that you may have not thought of in a capacity that you've done already? Does that make sense?
Yes. So in rewatching them now, a couple things. I've watched the Clone Wars series recently, so that has made me more kind to sort of the world building in the prequels.
Gotcha.
Some of the design ideas and some of the way that George Lucas kind of expanded the palette of what the universe looks like.
Yes.
So that's a thing that I like coming back to it. Seeing Rebels, which I don't horribly dislike,
right.
But I do feel like this is the first product we've seen with really no George Lucas.
Yeah.
And there are parts where it feels like it is hitting the notes, but it's not playing the music.
Yes. Okay. Well said.
And it made me appreciate that what Star Wars has been, for good or bad, is the brainchild of ultimately this one kind of weird dude, and it feels very human. Even though Phantom Menace is like a giant mess in some ways, it feels like a mess made by a human instead of made by a committee.
Yeah.
And I appreciate, like, no matter how insane or crazy or even bad something might be, it is human from this one weird dude.
Yeah. With no one telling him no. And now Joseph was the one I talked about, how the book, How Star Wars Conquered the Universe. Uh-huh. It was this man who recommended it to me. Gotcha. We'd run past Cross here in the Marvel show, and he's, you gotta read that book. And I gushed about it last week, and I love it. And
so many people bought it, by the way. Yeah. Thank you for the pictures up on the Facebook page.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, I love the stuff about the prequels and how a lot of, not a lot of yes men surrounding him, but it was still George's story. And yeah. I think a lot of the elements, there's names, Mace Windu, and all these other names that came from the original draft of the Adventures yeah. of Luke Starkiller, all that kind of stuff. So it is definitely, I understand some of it. When I saw one of his original scripts for Star Wars, and it had Naboo in it, I'm like, oh,
yeah,
I've been hammering this guy, and he kind of always had it in his head.
Yeah, this is what he meant. He meant there to be weird little non-human-sized aliens running around, and he meant everything to be a hit-you-over-the-head political allegory. It's right. just we didn't run with that in the 70s and 80s.
We went in the middle.
And the prequels are so, you know, like, flashing on the screen, we're talking about George Bush now.
Yeah, exactly.
But he always intended that, you know?
Right.
Something
right.
that I took away from watching the movies again, which I'd never seen before in my life, was on Geonosian in the scene there where they're all like doing that kind of freaky thing with the execution.
I don't remember the dance party on Geonosian.
You're welcome, Internet.
That's angry arms. Because they're doing the assassination via, you know, mythical beast. But the actual structure of the building that they had created there, I mean, I think this is me now, you know, being in my 20s, understanding how the female anatomy works. But there is a building right. that is literally made up of vaginas.
Yeah.
Yes, and I don't think that's what George Lucas intended. I don't think he sat down with the designers and said, what about a big stone vagina?
Oh, I couldn't believe that. I was like, kind of stop, rewind, play. No, I'm really not tripping. That is screenshot. Put it up on the website.
Some creature design guys in a booth going, I'll show them.
No, I actually think Disney it was thing. Like a, let's do it like that and then have a stone there and then, yeah, and do lots of those. And then afterwards it's like, hey, do you reckon that looks like a vagina?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, you know, as we discussed before, knee numb inhibited my sexual growth for a long time. Scared me a lot.
He is your co-pilot.
He is
in
my
life.
Co-pilot. So let's dive in specifically to episode one, The Phantom Excellent. Menace. Came out May 1999. Like I said, I waited in line. You waited in line. You waited in line, too. Just you were a lot younger than us.
Yeah.
Crowds erupted. Things, I mean, we were chanting, our fists were in the air when a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away came, and there's a trade okay, but let's get into it. We're not here to bash. We're here to talk, celebrate, and defend. Joseph, where do you want to start with Phantom Menace?
Well, I think the thing that a lot of people would say is the lightsaber battle at the end, I think is perhaps the best lightsaber battle in terms of just the way it is shot and performed. It is fast and impressive and cool, but you can tell what's going on.
And they actually use their force powers, which I like as well.
Yeah.
You just didn't really get much of a sense of that in the originals. Like force pushing, there's the occasional choke, but in terms of...
You made an excellent point that you can see what's going on. Because some of the other, I was complaining about seeing the Battle of Too Many Armies last night, finally getting out to see it. Those battles make me dizzy. I got nauseated because I just don't know what's going on, even in some of the one-on-one fights. That one, it was this two-on-one, but there was a story being told.
Yeah, and I love anything where you can really see the Jedi and the Sith behaving the way that they always talk about behaving. Mm-hmm. And the scene where Maul and Qui-Gon are separated by the energy shield and they handle their downtime in completely different ways.
Yes,
where Maul is pacing like an animal.
That's it.
And Qui-Gon's just like, whatever's going to happen, man.
Yeah.
You know, and just takes a knee. You know,
gets on a knee.
Yeah. He's like Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights. And I love that. So the whole lightsaber fight, that it feels like it's directed by somebody else.
I feel like we're going in that direction a lot more with Star Wars, with Rebels especially, how it's who your trainer is. Like, who is your master? Because you are trained with the lightsaber in a particular fashion.
Right.
And I notice the Inquisitor in this particular instance is like, I can predict all your moves because I know who trained you, and you're actually doing a sloppy job of that as well. So it's, I think that's the training and like the fighting styles is going to be a big thing in this next movie, I predict.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, that'd be really cool. Another thing that I really like in Phantom Menace, which is incredibly subtle, is whatever's going on between Qui-Gon and Shmi. It seems like they had a little something going on.
Absolutely.
Are you right?
Absolutely. You know that Qui-Gon's like, I'd break my code for this one. And but I just can't.
Well, and he's a code breaker. I mean, not he doesn't break codes.
Right.
Alan Turing. He's been yelled at the whole movie about not following the code, and that becomes important
but
and expanded.
But he leaves his pop as well.
Yeah, that he's this sort of like almost 1970s hippie. Like, I just go in my van and I have adventures, and maybe you'll tell me what to do, but do what I want in my van. I'll pick up kids. I'll hook up with Shmi. I don't care.
You make a great point. Qui-Gon had a heart that led him.
Mm-hmm.
He went against it, and he was kind of that rebel.
Anakin is, especially.
You're right. His master was Dooku. Obviously, Dooku went off. Again, I'll say it in the novels, which I know does... I don't want to read no books. We mentioned Red Letter Media about every episode here. We talk about the prequels. But that's fleshed out a little bit where Qui-Gon was close to maybe following Dooku. And Dooku plays jumping ahead to attack the clones for a second. When Obi-Wan's captured, Dooku's like, hey, your master was pretty much on my team. You want to come on over this side? So, it feeds in. So,
and I think that's a great part of the prequels that they really dive into that idea of seeing things from a slightly different perspective will determine your reality, like Qui-Gon says, and Obi-Wan's obfuscations to Luke that, you know, from a certain point of view, all that is really there. And because we don't really dive into the actual meat of the ideology, you can totally see how this is a corrupt kind of government that's not working well. Mm. A dude like Qui-Gon might go like, yeah, no, I'm not down with this anymore.
How can I support a cause that I don't believe in?
Yeah. I'm going to take this mom out for a dinner.
Yeah.
That's kind of
see
kinda
where it goes. I'm going to take you out for dinner. Can't rescue you from slavery.
Is there a whole nother side story where this isn't the first time Qui-Gon and Shmi have met at all? They have a little secret tryst maybe 9 years before.
You think?
And,
maybe when she's like, I don't know, he didn't have a father. Qui-Gon's like, what?
Yeah. Oh, we're going with that? We're doing that?
No, we're saying now?
Okay. I can't support that interpretation. No. It's just a little thing. A little could have been.
Do you know what it is? I think everyone holding on to any kind of proper sexual chemistry, because there wasn't any with anything else in any of the prequels. There was no other real sexual chemistry.
And it was very stated. It was very...
Hand on shoulder.
Versus, yeah.
It was just a little like... nice. Like, you know, some older divorcee is going like, we know how it is. We've been around the block.
Yeah.
I know what you're thinking. I know.
He was meant to help you. And I was meant to help you. So, all right. So that's that. What? Keep going, man. This is great. We're throwing them out. The people... I'm reading your comments, too, by the way, but I want to hear this man spew his knowledge.
And we're also going to go then into pros and cons that you guys have suggested to defend, too.
Okay, so this might annoy people, but I'll say it really quickly, because I don't know how much your fans like the deep cuts of Expanded Universe.
It's hit or miss.
Okay,
we'll see
if I upset people. I have developed a fondness for Team Toe, the pod racer, because of his backstory in a Sony PlayStation 1 video game.
Oh my god, that is awesome. That is something that I can support.
Dive in, explain it.
There
she'll
is
love it.
Pod racer?
He's a pod racer. He gets
which video game?
This is the PlayStation 1, and it was you play through the narrative of Phantom Menace. But like a lot of video games, it adds more complications so you can have missions. So is complicated is Qui-Gon's path in the actual movie is to just get Anakin into the race. It's even more like he goes to this person for this part, and they're like, okay, but you got to save this person from that, and okay, you can get that part, but you need it.
Yep.
So there is a mission where someone is going to assassinate Team Toe because they think he's going to win the race, and Qui-Gon finds him just drunk as hell in a bar. And you find out that Team Toe is this little... He's a champion, but he's an alcoholic.
Oh.
And Qui-Gon saves him from being assassinated and kind of props him up and moves him on to the race.
It's going to be okay. Aww. They're there.
And I love that story of Team Toe. And I also love that somebody looked at the story of Phantom Menace and said, you know what needs to be more complicated? That middle part where they're trying to get off Tatooine.
That pod race part. Wizard! Now that's pod racing. You enjoy the pod race?
I don't hate the pod race anywhere near as much.
I love the sound effects.
Yeah, I think the sound effects are great. The design of the pods are cool. It's got a lot of nods for people who like the original trilogy with the Jawas and the Sand People.
That's a great point because
I love how you can turn any Star Wars noise into what seems like a great dance beat.
Ooh, what is that happening?
In theater, I loved the pod race and I loved the Sand People. I bought into that part of the nostalgia. It didn't, it was comical, maybe a little forced, but it's just seemed, yeah, no, they would be up there like, hey, boom, yeah, we're the sand people, we're shooting
it's
at
funny
these
part
guys.
Of the movie.
I enjoyed that part.
Yeah.
I've never been against that part. It was fun, and I enjoyed the pod race itself.
Yeah.
And there's some great shots in that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, it's well shot. And
the flag.
Well edited. And,
at the beginning.
Yeah.
That's immediately followed by a fart joke. Thanks, George. But.
And there is some tension because Qui-Gon's plan is so dumb. Like, I think there's dramatic tension from Qui-Gon being so far out there that nobody else wants this. And Qui-Gon's just no, like, nope.
This is going
to My heart will go on. This is what my heart tells me to do is to. That this will somehow save the universe to let this boy race.
I'm just picturing Qui-Gon on the stern of the ship now with the wind blowing through his long hair.
Holding Shmi. Yeah.
Oh, just there's like going to be some fan fiction out there.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
I'm sure there's some pictures. So should we go to some fan comments about episode one? Or is there anything else big you want to talk about
they're,
episode one on the positive
mainly
side?
Concepts. No, that's good. They're mainly concepts that they're going. One that is prevalent to Phantom Menace is the mentioning of the midichlorians.
Right,
so we've got Nick Harold who Facebooked in saying, one of the key aspects of what made me love Star Wars is the ethereal mystic aspect of the Force, as beautifully explained by Alec Guinness in the original Star Wars. Then, in the prequels, in one swoop of George's pen, he managed to completely remove any element of fantasy associated with the Force by making them quantifiable, measurable, a measurable commodity with the introduction of the midichlorians, the Force, and by extension, Jedis, and then the a lot of their and then lost a lot of their mystery. Mm-hmm. Defend the use and the kind of breakdown of midichlorians.
Okay, so for one thing, it's again from the sort of meta real life perspective that George Lucas's twisted idea of a treat that he had thought that people would enjoy learning more. Mm-hmm. And then from a sort of fan or in-world perspective, the idea that the Force is still mystical, but it is also kind of a blood disease.
But that, it's like he's gone from religion to science. It's like, yeah, you believe in a god? Evolution.
Yeah, that's and like, I think we get science out of it because we get the little, here, measure them, and it can be quantified and all
count.
That. Absolutely. But let's look at the way we're using science. What is actually said is, there are tiny alien beings that reside in all of us and whisper things about what the Force wants. That's not exactly,
that's not
here's
science.
How evolution works, bam.
Yeah.
It's still pretty mystical. It's just, for some reason, going
it just sounds creepy now.
Another layer on the mystical for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I think that's good.
I thought that was very well written by Nick. Like, the way he writes is beautiful.
Good comment. Yeah, you were saying?
I think the other thing is it makes it interesting storytelling in that if you start losing a lot of body parts, that you do start losing your connection to the Force is an interesting perspective on Vader, of Palpatine really wanted Vader because he's the most powerful Jedi ever. And then he lost a lot of blood.
Yeah.
And now he's just kind of a creaky robot.
He's a jelly bean.
That's a good defense.
That's a good defense.
Whether or not I fully get behind it, that's a good defense of midichlorians.
Episode one, here's another one from Chris Whitehead. Killing off Darth Maul at the end of episode one was a big mistake. I'm so glad that he can come back in Clone Wars and is still alive in the Star Wars canon. But someone else was saying that killing him off was too soon, that whole story arc should have been extended a lot longer, even into Attack of the Clones maybe. And I agree. I feel like you have the most scary dude. I mean, look at him. We've never seen anyone like that. He's got sharp teeth. He's got horns out of his head, painted
face. Double lightsaber.
And then, he's got the best weapon you've ever seen, ever. Like, when that happened, you're like, this guy is going to FS up.
He's got great hand gestures. He's got that come at me, bro.
Like, this guy's so scary. And then you're like, whoa, this is going to be our kids over. He's dead.
Yeah.
And it was like, that could have really been stretched out.
And then
out.
Even some of the Peter Serafinowicz lines that you saw in the trailer don't even make the final cut. So he has less to say. He goes early. I've always wondered if Lucas knew what he had. What do you think about Darth Maul going?
I think it would have been great if he had more in Phantom Menace. I'm a big Obi-Wan fan. I think it was great to give Obi-Wan such a triumphant, definitive moment. I think we've all seen villains fall down shafts into mystery.
Yeah.
And I do like Lucas was like, nope, let's cut him in half. So there is no BS. Obi-Wan won this fight. And I think it is a triumphant moment and a cool moment for Obi-Wan. And it's got to raise his stakes in, like, we haven't seen a Sith in Millennium. And then his Padawan beat him definitively is cool.
In the pro wrestling terms, Obi-Wan just got put over by the big heel Darth Maul, and I think that did add some weight to it. I always wondered if just Lucas needed that story element, and then we all, much like Boba Fett, glommed to this cool action figure. And yeah, I was sad to see him go.
Yeah, it's too soon. Too soon. Way too soon.
And then he's replaced by, you know, Saruman. He comes in and Dooku, yeah. 80-year-old guy.
Who's not intimidating, really.
All right, but...
I agree that it really put Obi-Wan's status up,
yeah.
And it really showed his character. I think it would have been cooler if he knew he lost Qui-Gon, he was completely out of his depth, he escaped. I think it would have been good if he'd trapped him somehow, and he ran. And so there, throughout the whole... oh, my God! But throughout the rest of that movie and then going into Attack of the Clones, you knew that you're the guy that you're rooting for, who lost everything, was being hunted.
So if the end of the film was Obi-Wan seeing Qui-Gon die and just going, son of a... And then turning around and running and would just go to the credits...
No, because I think the whole being chased.
Back to you.
Like, being you know, chased. Escaping, you know, getting out of Tatooine and then going on to the next place. And then knowing that, you know, the presence is looming. This guy's, like, there.
I mean, I think one of the great things about the prequels is everyone has a, how would I reorganize all these cool ideas into something that highlights the best parts in something that is a little bit more narratively trim. And
I'm
yeah,
getting I could, excited about something that's never going to happen.
I could do that all day, but I want to be thankful for what exists.
Yes.
And also, I will say, like, Darth Maul is like being kissed by the most beautiful person in the world in Phantom Menace, and then you wait like a decade, and then you actually get to have a relationship with them in the Clone Wars. It is like the longest sort of build of desire.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda.
I wanted to see Darth Maul so much, and I was so satisfied when they did develop his character, and he was awesome in Clone Wars.
Yeah, he was. And even the animatronic, you know, robot legs didn't distract. I got behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good job. Good job.
Should we move on to Attack of the Clones?
Let's move on to Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. Now, for me, after the disappointment of Phantom Menace, it took me 8 times in the theater to convince myself that this movie might not have been up to my Star Wars nerd fan standards. But Attack of the Clones, the trailer comes out. I'm excited. You got the Jedis. They're all fighting. Things are happening. I said, here we go again. I didn't wait in line to buy tickets.
I said, I got a bad feeling about this. Oh, no, wait, they all did, like 9 times.
I was Pacific Theaters, Northridge Fashion Center 10. I was out at 9 a.m. with my tickets and my friend Paul waiting, and I'm giving him the theories that the Jedis are actually the a-holes of the galaxy because they'd like to go drink and hang out at bars, but they tell everyone else not to do it. And the Attack of the Clones comes on. Had some moments. Had some stuff I like. Had my favorite sound in the Star Wars universe.
Yes, you
did. Which we talked about before.
The explosion in the asteroids.
The sonic. It's had some cool stuff. Still fell short. But there's things to like in Attack of the Clones, right?
Yes. I like pretty much everything that's going on with Obi-Wan. And I feel like, in general, one of the prequel problems...
He looks better. He got rid of that damn mullet.
Yeah. Oh, he's got the mullet in Attack of the Clones.
Oh, is it the he still got it?
He got rid of the ponytail. So the braids
It's, I mean, I like Obi-Wan, even though I have to look at a space mullet the whole time. Which shows
we call
you
it
how much,
a spullet.
How much I like that. I like how much Star Wars lore that is filled in. Phantom Menace filled in sort of Star Wars lore that you never wondered about, like, did Darth Vader build C-3PO?
Right.
I always wondered. But Attack of the Clones is the first time that you got sort of information that you did wonder about. Yeah. What are the Clone Wars? How does Boba Fett maybe fit into this universe?
I thought that was great.
Yeah, which was an expanded universe use from Timothy Zahn created Coruscant. That was one of the things Lucas plucked directly from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the fleshing out of who is whose Padawan. Yoda, does Yoda use a lightsaber? All those things. And I did feel like Phantom Menace, one of my biggest concerns was the amount of too wacky humor.
Yeah.
In Clones,
Misa
really dialed that down.
Yeah.
There's some stuff there with C-3PO that I don't feel excitement for. Yeah. But it dialed down the wackiness by a lot.
Kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
All right, so what is the penultimate scene for you in that movie? Which one is the one that you gravitate to when you watch it? Like, you put in the DVD and think, I'm looking forward to that scene.
pretty much anything with Obi-Wan. I like all of his sort of detective stuff on Kamino. I like getting a sense of what his life is like, that he has... You're not supposed to have attachments as Jedi, but he clearly has this pal that he goes to see at the diner. And you kind of see, like, this is the level of relationship that is appropriate for a Jedi. So I like seeing that. I like kind of how Obi-Wan consistently is a character is just a little shady and, like, a little... kind of like from a certain point of view is like, that's probably tattooed. You probably got a tramp stamp from a certain point of view. And that attitude is on display from everything he does to the sort of the suspect sort of like, he has a drink at the bar when Zam Wessel is chasing them. Maybe to draw Zam Wessel, but maybe just because
he felt like
he wants a drink.
He was parched.
He wants a Jawa juice.
And,
but no,
and
then, sticks.
Yeah, and then the way he just kind of rolls with it in Kamino when he has no idea what's going on.
Right.
And he has the...
Lama Su comes out and is like, thank you for coming.
Yes! That's what I'm here for. Yeah, and it's very charming and scummy.
I like how you phrase it as the Obi-Wan kind of detective storyline. Yeah. That's really kind of what it was. Yeah. And I did like that.
And then there's the car chase, which was just between Slave One.
And I love the scene with Yoda and the younglings, because again, you see a little bit of the actual Jedi stuff. You see Yoda.
I want to see more of that.
Training them. And you see a little bit of Yoda from Empire Strikes Back, where he has a sense of humor and a sense of whimsy. You see a little bit of the world that the Jedi are actually defending, where, like, everything is happy and peaceful, and we're training these young people, and we're asking their opinions, and we're laughing at their jokes, and we're laughing at our own ignorance, and it creates a little picture of, like, hey, here's some of the stuff that's actually nice and worth fighting for.
Can you defend anything with the Geonosians? Can you defend why they were finding out about the clone operation and getting arrested or, you know what I mean? Like, they were bound and then sent to death with those three creatures. Can you defend that part of the movie? I felt it was all – it could have been done quicker.
So you really don't like the arena part with the Ackley and the Nexu and the Reek.
I truly
– he knows the name.
Deeply – love you.
Yeah, that's one of my least favorite.
Well, that's now you're getting into the romance, which is different than the arena scene. The arena scene is
what
fine. It's the beasts.
Yeah.
I believe I could get this wrong, so fans feel free to yell at me. I'm apologizing in advance if I get it wrong. I believe it's Reek, Ackley, and Nexu.
There's only one Reek
that
I
is
recognize.
How you turn me on.
And that's not even a scene you like.
I know. Well, that was actually
I feel like Star Wars has always been about serial adventure, where it goes from a chapter of adventure to a chapter of adventure, and that is one where I feel like Lucas just wants some more adventure. And what's a fun, incredibly big CGI adventure they can have? It also shows Anakin using the Force well for once to just calm the beast and ride it instead of being aggressive and trying to kill it. Shows him
a glimpse of the good side.
Peaceful. Yeah, good side. Yep.
Okay. I can get behind that. Now, I'm like you in the romance.
Oh, can we go on to the romance?
Yeah, we'll go to that. That's one of the biggest wasted scenes to me.
Wow.
That was a beautifully shot, and I've heard you talk about the prequels before in other shows. There's a lot of beautiful stuff in it, and that shot of them, the truly deeply love me scene, if they had just shut up, kissed, and gone out to the arena, that's a beautiful moving shot to me.
She didn't need to say a word. Yes, I agree.
And I think later on in the rumination scene in Sith, where the Jedi Temple is on fire and she's staring out in that great score.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
It's a great moment. It kind of paid off. But the romance, can you defend that? Is it just bad acting?
I think we've even got from Sack Groves. He said, the entire autistically hackneyed love story throughout the trilogy. It rings so hollow. It feels like it was written by a robot that only reads about human emotions in a book.
Yes.
Chappy love?
Defend that.
Well, I think that is relatively accurate. I think George Lucas, if you read about him, he doesn't have a romantic side. He appears to be a really nice guy with, like, lots of exciting ideas and but a little bit of a sort of Jedi detachment seems to be, that is who George Lucas is. So I don't think he has, as a writer, an instinctive idea of what romance is. I think it is also acted poorly, so some of the lines are okay. Mm-hmm. Many of them are horrific. Some of them are okay, but those actors can't play them. It seems like they have the exact same dynamic as Han and Leia, in that Han is a sort of roguish guy who is trying to be charming, trying to sort of break down her defenses. She is totally charmed by him, but just doesn't want to have a relationship, and so she kind of refutes it. That's the dynamic in Empire Strikes Back. And I think that's the dynamic they were trying to do. But without the charm, it is a creeper, almost MRA guy, hitting on a woman who has no interest, clearly says, "You're making me uncomfortable."
Yeah.
My only defense of the romance is that it is a great PSA for what not to do. Especially right now in gender-charged times where we're having really good discussions about what is consent, what is appropriate. Guys, if you find yourself behaving anything like Anakin in episode 2, you are wrong.
If you've ever lightly stroked a woman's arm and said, "Sand, I hate sand," you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, you just defended it.
Yeah.
Damn, you're good.
Yeah. Okay.
Hayden Christensen's acting, it's so bad, says Tyler Moore.
Yeah, it's not his fault. I'm an actor. I have acting background. It is incredibly hard to be thrown in front of a green screen with a sort of a cold person who doesn't have a lot of advice for you, and you're just pulling it out of thin air. It takes an amazing actor like Ewan McGregor to make everything up himself. Same thing with Liam Neeson to make everything up for himself. I think at points Natalie Portman is putting her back into the acting, and at points she isn't.
Sure.
But I think it is he was a young actor with no direction doing his best. And I don't think the acting is good, but I understand why it happened that way. Mm-hmm. If a director – I mean there's so many actors don't look at the big picture, and lots of actors are trained to just like, don't look at the big picture. Don't worry about what your character is selling in terms of the whole narrative. Just do your lines the way you think your character would.
Right.
So he comes in and goes, "Oh, Anakin is young and angry and cocky, and I need to hint that he's going to go to the dark side. So I'll play all of those things."
Right.
And if a good director had taken him aside and said, "Actually, in this chapter, what we really need to show is that you're powerful, but you're charming. You like Obi-Wan, even though you disagree with him. You really want Padme to like you."
And if he'd be likable.
Yeah, if he had played all of those things with the hint of darkness, which is great in the Clone Wars cartoon, because that's who the character is in Clone Wars.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I think the only defense is just he's a human being, and he was not in a great position.
He did make Ewan McGregor look incredible. Like the number one comment that we've been getting on what is the most redeeming quality about the prequels is Ewan McGregor. And I have to agree, he is an incredible Obi-Wan. His acting is spot on. He's relatable. You are there with him. And then the conversation, you're like, yes, no, yes, no, yes. And shut your mouth.
I really hope Ewan gets another shot at Obi-Wan.
I want that more than anything.
Amazing.
I would love that. Take me to Tatooine those 19 years he's gone.
Ugh.
Tyler Moore, Hayden Christensen, he was so bad, and that got a lot of likes on our page. And Hayden, much like Jake Lloyd, he's going to take a lot of that hit because he was out in center. But these are good actors, and you have, I mean, you know, I'm looking at these figures here of Natalie Portman. At the time, she struggled, but...
How old was she, like 19 or something?
She started shooting like 14, 15. And around the same time of Attack of Clones and Sith, between that time frame, I get the years a little closer comes out, which is a spectacular movie. And you're like, the girl stripping in front of Clive Owen is, you know.
Yeah. And this is also why I have no patience for people critiquing Mark Hamill's performance, because I think he does a great job. He's out there in the middle of the desert alone.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned that on the show, and I think that's a great point, that Hamill, I don't like when people, well, he didn't go on to anything. He's one of the great voice actors of our time.
He's the Joker, man.
He's the Joker, and so many other things. But, yeah, he breathed a lot into that character and made him the sympathetic baby face of that story.
Yeah.
By his interpretation, because you had George just going, the droids are falling apart. Do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he makes those choices for himself. And I think Hayden Christensen tried to make those choices, and I think he just made the wrong ones.
You know what? Enough. Like you said, Natalie Portman has been so great in so many other movies. V for Vendetta, we can go on. But Hayden Christensen hasn't found his niche. He hasn't really fallen into... And I loved him as, you know, a 14, 15-year-old. I was obsessed with Hayden Christensen. But again, I had Rose and Love Heart colored glasses on. Like, I watched Life as a House. I thought, that was so great. This was so great.
It's and then jumper I watched, one he did, yeah.
I watched that, and I was like, he's not good. Really, I think, had they got someone on who was a good actor, the prequels would have been better on a whole. Like,
yeah.
A lot better.
Yeah, I think so.
That's fair enough. Oof. What did you think about General Grievous?
I like General Grievous. I don't know why people...
We're jumping ahead to Sith, I know, but I wanted to...
I don't know why people... I mean, I understand why people hate him as much as they do, and maybe he feels a little jammed in if you're just watching the movies, but I don't really know what hardcore Star Wars fan is, like, just the movies, nothing else. Like, I mean, come on. The video games, the cartoons, his great introduction in the original Clone Wars animated series.
The thing about Attack of the Clones, and we've mentioned it here, and I've seen some people here in the chat room saying this now, the clones... didn't attack, they defended. So the movie advertises something we never saw until the animated series came out.
Such a good
the clones, movie. The handling of that, the handling of the end of that movie. I liked certain parts of that battle I mentioned before. Lucas had some great shots, those zooming shots. I thought there was some, it made me feel like that 14-year-old kid.
But that was to play over too soon.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
I would have liked to see more of that, but the clones didn't attack.
Well, I think the film should have been called Attack of the Knowledge of the Existence of the Clones, because I feel like it's the Jedi who are attacked by finding out that they exist at all.
Yeah.
But that doesn't ring true. I mean, I like the...
That is a massive mind screw. Oh, my God.
I'm just running through this summer, Star Wars, Attack of the... Episode 2, the Jedi learn things they didn't previously know.
Which is a lot. I think watching the prequels again, and it also happens in the Clone Wars cartoon, there are so many times where the Jedi consult wisely and then say, this is very important, we'll have to look into it some more. So, like, the whole Jedi philosophy is sort of... let's put a pin in it.
I think the most important member of the Jedi team is, what's her name, Jocasta, the librarian.
Yeah.
Because she's the one who's like, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Let me get a holocron.
The archives. The archives do play a huge role in these sorts of
things. Yeah, and it's cool to see those in Attack of the Clones. I like the titles. I like the titles being very pulpy and very 1930s serial. And I agree that the clones could have done some more attacking and been more prevalent.
Fight of the Clones might have been, I don't know. But that's a nitpicky thing, but it is one of those things like
clones. What the hell? That could have been
a kind of movie.
What
like,
is this?
Well, it wasn't really a battle. The could have been the attack of the battle droids more than anything. But all right, so let's. This time we've got a great show going on here. We got about 15 minutes here to go. Let's move on to Revenge of the Sith. Easily acknowledged as the best of the prequels, Episode 3. I was excited for that one as well. I was like, let's do it again. This is an abusive relationship, but I'm jumping back in. I got my tickets first day. I thought the trailer again was good. I still think the Phantom Menace trailer is the best of all of them, that first one. But I was on board by this point. Where were you as a fan? Were you kind of like...
I don't think I watched it opening weekend.
Okay.
Yeah. But okay. The other thing is you're going in knowing what's going to happen. You know how it ends, but it's how you get
you
to
don't know. Yeah, you
ending.
Don't. You know what is going to happen, but you don't really know how.
My favorite meme out of this whole thing, especially at the end sequence with all the lava and the battles, is showing that the similarities between that and Scar and Mufasa in The Lion King when they're battling as well.
So I've seen a lot of people in the chat room saying the clones attack the arena. That's not true from a militaristic standpoint. They defended the Jedi. Think about that. They didn't attack the arena. The battle droids were attacking the Jedi in the arena. They came to the defense at the arena.
But I can see this. If you're playing like model warfare, you defend if you start in that position.
Okay, so we'll roll some dice, roll some D20s.
So the best titles are the ones that you need to defend by being really pedantic about war games.
Modern Warfare is an FPS shooter.
One of my favorite lines from Revenge of the Sith, because it didn't hit my ear correctly until recently, is when General Grievous says, I'm taking you to a volcano planet, you will be safe there. I can't remember which Separatist leader goes, safe! And then it cuts really quickly, but that's a great stand-up bit of like...
So the Neimoidians, they're taking, that's when they're relocating?
To Mustafar,
and the other Separatist leaders.
Taken to Mustafar. Where were you at this point when Sith comes out? Were you like, I mean, you're going to see it, here we go again, or give it another shot?
My whole Star Wars thing is I had always had sort of ridiculous, I remained positive and hopeful. But by the time Sith came out, I knew what I was in for. I knew that there would be some clumsy acting, some bad lines. But I expected it to, like clones, get darker and darker.
Right.
And that's the stuff that I enjoyed is when it actually got to be what I thought it should be all along, which is a Shakespearean tragedy in the terms of you know that Anakin is going to have his downfall. And as humans, we just naturally feel these great emotions when he's at a fork in the road, and it could have gone differently.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all of what Shakespeare's tragedies are about, is you can see Macbeth is going to do the wrong thing, but every time you watch or read Macbeth, you go, but Macbeth, if you do it that way. And I think I was looking forward to that in Revenge of the Sith, delivered that.
Okay, yeah, I agree with that. Mm. Every time I get to the last 30 minutes, I get excited for A New Hope.
Yeah.
When I see the fight, I see Jimmy Smith's Bail Organa and Captain Antilles and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, I love all that. Yeah. I just think that the fight on Mustafar is a little, like, for me, I skip it. I would.
Really?
That's too far.
Okay.
I can.
Okay.
You're following a path. I cannot come with you.
I don't like the CGI placement. I think that some of the fight parts were clunky. And then the way that it ended. Don't jump over me. You know what's going to happen. Don't do it. You did it.
Okay, so
he leaves his best friend to die? Yeah.
I will defend that. Okay, a lot of people don't like the I have the high ground. Here's what I like from it's dumb.
It's not even a subtle metaphor.
It's not a metaphor.
The whole I have the higher ground?
I don't think it's intended as a moral thing at all.
I think it's just a battle. I think
it's just a physical placement.
I think it's just...
That makes it even worse.
We need to have without doing slow-mo, because that's not Star Wars, we need to have a pause in the fight where Anakin, his hubris allows him to literally be cut down. And I think it functions on that level, that Obi-Wan wins because he is calm and wise and he is using the Force the way the good side should, for defense, calmly, wisely, not out of anger and aggression. And we just need a way to see that, where he gets to higher ground. It's not this, like, ferocious, I want to kill you. It's, I have a tactical advantage.
It's a BS tactical advantage that we made up.
But it's really important that we have the opportunity for Obi-Wan to calmly say, please just stop. I don't want to do this, and I really can from where I'm standing.
Right.
And Anakin's like, ah!
Okay.
I think it rings true, and for me, I don't disagree with the fighting on the lava platforms. And there's, like I said, I just saw Battle of Five Armies finally. I'm one of the biggest Lord of the Rings trilogy fan, the original three movies, the first trilogy. These last three, it was just it was an animated movie, basically, and it takes me out of it.
They put all the figurines in a washing machine and put it on, and I'm like, yeah, go.
I get there's parts of the swinging and everything. It's trying to be dramatic, but I think the core for me, not taken away from you, but for me, there's that core that you are the chosen one.
Okay, I'm love. And I will get goosebumps every time.
You got him now.
I feel that.
Yeah, I feel Obi-Wan's pain as he watches his friend light on fire. And Obi-Wan so didn't want to do that, but felt he had to.
Right.
That was hard for me to watch as well.
And we got a little bonus time from Steven. Doth Steven in the engineer. We're doing a great job today. You've got some funny comments I'm seeing on there too, Steven. Thank you. So, all right, Sith, what are some of your favorite scenes outside of the end? What are some things you like in Sith?
I think everything about Palpatine's manipulation is amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that Ian McDiarmid, starting with Return of the Jedi, when he was just allowed to do whatever he wanted, and he said, and he was like, what if I talked like this?
Yeah, no,
and it was like, thumbs up, go for it.
And he was like 35, 36 at the time, but Jedi.
Yeah.
You know.
Really?
Yeah.
That guy has been like 60 for like the last 30 years in my mind.
He's like Robert Duvall.
He just he's an actual Sith Lord. I don't know if you, if you knew that.
Right.
The scene Jedi where every scene with Anakin is great, but when he manipulates him with the story of Darth Plagueis is amazing, and beat for beat, exact. Like, I felt like my incredible dumb optimism and hope about these movies was justified by that scene alone, that Lucas did have it in him to do a subtle, layered, nuanced scene, and also one that's relatable, where you could see how Anakin would maybe start to distrust the Jedi, and he would have a clear, relatable motive for becoming a murderous monster.
I will go along with that and say that scene in the Mon Calamari Opera House is probably one of my top five sequences in all of the Star Wars universe.
I'm going to agree with you, because it is the dangling of the carrot, but the carrot represents power. Mm-hmm. You know, for the first time, it's just in reach, you know. But this is also the very, very first time, apart from the midichlorians, where we've gone into a lore that we haven't seen. I mean, we've kind of figuring out that you see the base parts of big characters, like General Grievous, da-da-da. You know, you'll see them for the first time. You get a top layer, the tip of the iceberg. And then when you explore the expanded universe in the video games and the shows, you really do get a sense, and that's when the characters are done justice.
Yeah.
But this is the first time where they've gone into something that's like mythology.
Yes.
Star Wars mythology. And it's like, there is a guy. This is his story, you know. And you don't really know that Plagueis was, you know, his master or what this Plagueis guy looks like or anything like that. But you, for the first time, understand that the Force and the dark side is bigger than you've ever thought or
known. Yeah, and it, for fans of the original trilogy, it did have that excitement where you were just given just a little bit of something and you could interpret it and you can guess and you can have fun with your friends discussing, like, did Palpatine create Anakin to be his apprentice?
Yeah.
Which, personally, I believe he did.
You go with that route? Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah, I think he absolutely did.
But why? I mean, that's such another discussion. Jake is a slave on Tatooine. How did those paths cross? How did Palpatine, choose Anakin?
Well, he didn't choose Anakin. He made him.
He made him, allegedly.
Oh, yeah, that I agree with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think he did? Yeah, and if you read the Lucina book, Plagueis, which gets mentioned here with Christian Harloff a lot, and I think it's – I hope that book becomes canon or parts of it become canon because there's so much there to me that I enjoyed. But that – you guys both touched on why I like that scene so much. Despite being beat up in episode 1 and 2 and had my heart broken, there's this scene where the bigger universe gets alluded to, and I felt I learned something, but – had enough wiggle room to go, what was that? Mm. Just that, have you heard the story of Darth Plagueis the Wise?
And like, it is also like, just really, it's relatable, but at the same time, so scary and evil. The,
how would
some
it be like
would find to be unnatural. It's just so like, wow, I can totally understand why you do that, Anakin, but don't!
But how immortality is like the biggest thing you could offer anyone ever. Like,
yeah,
how do you...
and it makes it so the Jedi aren't just they're not just clearly good.
Yeah,
maybe they do just want to hold on to power. Like they believe that they're doing it for a good reason, but maybe they do just really want to hold on to power the way he's saying.
Yeah.
Do you think that Palpatine could have sensed the midichlorian count of Anakin and knew that it was higher than Yoda?
Well, yeah, because he made him.
Great.
Like. It's like he knew how much sugar there are, you know, in a brownie when he makes those.
Okay.
He made Anakin.
A little bit of this, a little bit of shmi, and here we go. One of the scenes I like, and I'll get your opinion on it here. I do like a lot of the Order 66 stuff and how they executed it. There were some bad things in there. The Raver Jedi kind of, dying was not my favorite.
But you're a Jedi! You've had training! Years and years of training! You don't go,
But even the way the shot, even she gets shot.
Slowly
she's
blasted between, under a mushroom.
But there was some of the stuff, when, Ki Adi Mundi is like, let's go!
Come on, guys!
Plo Koon dying, all that stuff.
Yeah.
I liked all that. What did you feel about that? It's easy to defend that part, but go into the detail what you feel about that stuff.
I think it's great. I think CGI Yoda did some really good acting. The dropping of the cane and the heartbreak and then Yoda defending himself. And Yoda crawling on Chewbacca is just like, there's some fanfic.
Yeah.
That's great. I love it.
Can you, though, defend, as part of Order 66, can you defend Anakin murdering the younglings?
Yes, I think it is a story. I think it makes sense. Is a story is what happens. I don't think how it happens is well executed in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the clear idea of you have all this righteous anger, Anakin, the Jedi have been dicks to you, and you need to be more powerful in the dark side by doing dark things.
And they kind of – they set it up a little bit with the sand people. You know, I killed them all. Attack of the Clones. The women, the children, I killed them all.
Yeah, certainly his capacity to do that is set up by the anger. I think a more elegant telling of that story would really, really underline Palpatine's manipulation of saying it's them or your wife. Mm-hmm. The Jedi are going to come for us. If even one child lives, they're going to come for us. And if you get rid of this threat – it will save your wife. And he says those things, but it's a litany of things. So it just feels like he's kind of throwing things at the board of like, by the way, the Jedi will come for us. By the way, it was technically treason and I'm not going to charge you for it. And, by the way, you do need to be powerful in the dark side by killing as many people as possible, as quickly as possible. He throws all those things out there. He says them. If the film had been made a little bit better as a film and any one of those rationales had been underlined, I don't think it would come off as. And for me, I watch it with all of those things filling in the weight of those things in the way the film is made doesn't show them as much as I would like.
You're right, though. The storyline, the irony is it's like you must kill the children to save your children.
Right. Yeah. I've always thought that if it was flipped, if he had been given the opportunity to slaughter all the separatist leaders first, so he killed these people, and then he was just starting to feel the power
the
of like
lust.
The bloodlust and the power of it, and then just anybody in my way who is not Padme or Palpatine, I'll kill anyone in the universe who is not Padme or Palpatine
right now. I agree that they should have done that. That's the order.
How were you with the... No, go for it.
I was going to say, like, by killing the children, could that have been the catalyst when he became Vader? Like, you know, like before... Because you know how, like, when they dubbed him Vader? I think that could have made it...
That was going to be my next question, so it follows off, is how did the actual handling... I love some of the subtext you're talking about, but the actual handling, Mace dies... Unlimited power happens, and then Anakin's just kind of like, what, you want me to...
No, now you're Darth.
Okay, I'll be Darth Vader. What's happening? I had a little problem with that.
Yes. I wish that there had been a little bit more change. I wish that there had been some, like, ceremony to it that, like, I wish Palpatine had given him the red lightsaber.
Ooh.
And, like, if he had just... It's something as simple as that, that Palpatine was like, pulls out another, and we see Vader's actual lightsaber.
Yeah.
We see, like, Anakin look unsure, and then ignite it.
Yeah. Oh.
And then it's the red that's killing the kid, and the red fighting with Obi-Wan. Like, something as simple as that in sort of storytelling, I think, would have made it pop.
The symbolism.
Something more than henceforth, which is my favorite.
Well, in those guttural animal noises. I both like it. I like it for real, and I'm also amused by it, because it's so, like...
If you've seen any one of these episodes...
There's a zoo in the back of my throat.
Not go by without me doing some sort of Palpatine voice, because it is my favorite voice in the film.
And it is so crazy, right? When he's saying all these, you will be strong.
And then my favorite one that I could do to make you laugh is the Return of the Jedi one. Is, I'm afraid that the fact that you will be quite...
When your friends arrive. Yeah, I love the switch from those words.
I'm afraid.
When your friends arrive, Commander.
Fully operational is my most quotable line. That's how it
is. It's an Usher single. What you do.
So let's talk about the things that are so great about it as well from the perspective of our fans. So we've got Colburn, who said two words. Best part about the prequels? Ewan McGregor. He was hands down the best part of the prequels, and I firmly believe he deserves his own Star Wars spin-off film. Imagine what he could do with good dialogue. 39 of you liked that comment. Cody Bradley added on to that, saying, yes, Ewan McGregor, in spite of all the terrible dialogue, McGregor still managed to give not just a decent, but a genuinely great performance. He emulated Alec Guinness perfectly. It's my favorite thing about the prequels.
Yeah, Christopher Garner says John Williams' score, absolutely flawless.
Yep.
We talked about this before. Duel of the Fates, come on.
Amazing. The music throughout Revenge of the Sith, as it calls back.
Yeah. A lot of people saying if you don't like watching the prequels, just listen to the prequels. Just listen to the music from it.
Lucas is kind of one of those guys.
I love it! I love it!
He's one of those guys that he kind of, dialogue is just kind of another part of the toolbox.
Yeah.
And he definitely more visualized. I mean, we both can agree that the crowning of Vader, so to speak, at the very end with the shot and his eyes going
wide. Franken-Vader.
I love that moment where Anakin's eyes go wide.
Yeah, I think
wide.
It's a good acting moment by Hayden Christensen where it almost feels like now I really get what I've done, that I'm being put in the prison I've made.
I will take that sequence and the smoke coming off and that pause, that pregnant pause, and then hits for the first time.
Yeah.
I'll take that, and I won't need to worry about, no! Like, you can have that. I have that scene.
Exactly.
That's great.
I would have preferred to have seen the symbolism of the red lightsaber.
Yeah.
But we could have had both.
Other stuff in Sith, Ian McDiarmid is Palpatine all through, but definitely in Sith, I think he's there. Other than he didn't really know how to do stage fighting, that was... They had to cut that out, but that's fine. Jango Fett, Kai Belling says, Jango Fett, he's one of the best Star Wars villains and infinitely better than Boba. I don't know if I would agree with that or not. What do you think about Fett?
I really enjoyed Jango Fett, and I enjoyed seeing that scene in Clones where you really got to see his sort of attitude in that. I thought that was a good line of dialogue. I'm just trying to make my way through the universe.
There's also a bit of symbolism there where it's like another father-son relationship, but it's like following the footsteps instead of, you know, not knowing who your father was and having completely different destinies.
You know.
And there was some interesting stuff with Boba in the Clone Wars series that I think was very good, that kind of developed on that. How much time we got left, Steven?
Just go.
Okay.
I really like to mention the William Maine one, if that's okay. Yeah, go for it. He actually said something that I'd never really thought about before. You kind of touched on it a little bit. He said that the creation of an even larger universe to explore through books and games. Mm-hmm, and this is the first time we're seeing a lot of these places. Kamino, you know, we've never seen that one before. Like I said, Coruscant. So this opening up this whole universe and like these places that we'd kind of heard of, we're actually seeing for the first time. I actually like that about the prequels.
I also think that like seeing some parts of the universe look in better shape and look pristine really informs the Empire not taking good care of the universe by the time of the original trilogy, where everything is falling apart and there probably aren't nice places like Naboo anymore.
I'm okay with that notion. You got a lot of that.
Alderaan.
You know, again, you can't change the fact that too soon that Star Wars was shot in 1976. You can't go back, and they had that was the computer graphics they had. Lucas obviously is going to try to go back and do all that, but I bought into the fact that the Nubian ships were sleek and kind of classic, like a car from the 1950s.
Yeah.
And times change. So I had no problem with that either, how different it looked.
Caves used to look like vaginas.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm telling you, that's the weirdest
thing.
That
was a fact.
And Jua Mugurli said that we get more insight into the Sith in the prequels and their point of view, as opposed to the original trilogy, where the word Sith wasn't even mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah, we knew that as kids from, like, bubblegum trading cards and whatnot.
Yeah, that the only mention was Darth Vader was the Dark Lord of the Sith. And you were like, I was like, Mom, what's that?
Sith?
Play through toys. Exactly. So you got a little bit of an explanation. Some of it had come out by the time, you know, Heir to the Empire and all that stuff. But to get it on screen, have the whole plague of stuff, that's a great point. I love that. Expand. It's hard to expand the universe. That's a term we know now from Star Wars, but we're seeing even with the Hobbit movies, or you're seeing even some stuff in Game of Thrones, where some of the Duncan Egg tales and stuff, it takes you into stuff you've heard about. And sometimes it's hard to, when it's a character mentions it as the past in the universe and you go to that past, it's sometimes just not as interesting as you imagined it.
Mm. Yeah.
So sometimes it hurts it, I think.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think the overall story of Anakin and seeing that he had a similar not good childhood to Luke, and he just didn't handle it well, it makes you really appreciate Luke when you watch the original trilogy. And Luke goes through lots of horrible things. Mm. His family is slaughtered. He immediately loses Obi-Wan. Like, as soon as Luke gets a father figure, they're immediately killed. But he continues to be a good Jedi and be a good person and be hopeful and optimistic and kind. And having seen Anakin's journey of not handling life's tragedies well make you appreciate the story of Luke handling life's tragedies with aplomb and humanity.
Which, again, would be great to symbolize the color of the lightsaber, because by the time Luke becomes a Jedi Knight, he has a green lightsaber. So he didn't choose the red. He had, like, I don't know.
I want to get your quick thought on a conspiracy theory, because you're such an educated Star Wars fan here. I love having you on here. Jeff 94, I think that's it, put the theory. We talked about it on our conspiracy theory shows about Boba Fett killing Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru. Can you get behind that theory?
Oh, yeah. I love that theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally, you're there with us. I'm in that boat, too.
Well, let's add it up again, just for those that aren't quite familiar with it. In the scene where Jabba the Hutt kind of infiltrates the fact that they're about to get on the Millennium Falcon, Boba Fett's there on Tatooine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he uses a flamethrower. And then they're burnt to a crisp.
So let's do a quick duel of the fates and then take a couple phone calls from the fans. Stephen, what's the number again for this booth?
424-256-1729.
Good luck with that if you didn't write it down.
I got it on the screen for you guys.
Oh, cool.
So we'll do some calls, but quick, we'll do duel of fates. It's our segment that we like to do where we take two things from the Star Wars universe and pit them against each other. We'll talk about it. We'll put it on our Facebook page, and you guys vote on the duel of fates. This one, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek. It's a little bit one-sided, but because we got Joseph here talking about the prequels, I say, what is the, quote, best reveal of the prequels? Midichlorians being behind the Force, or that R2-D2 knew everything in the original trilogy? Mark.
R2-D2 knowing everything.
Yeah.
I think that's the best, because he didn't say anything.
It's an awesome moment. You?
Yeah, I think it is awesome that R2-D2 knows everything.
Everything.
Because, and I think it's great that Obi-Wan absolutely recognizes R2, and somehow, through the magic of time, it works. If you embrace Obi-Wan as the, well, from a certain point of view guy, always, he says, oh, hello there. And it has a little bit of, like, You yeah. and I have dated, but we're not going to tell anyone at this party that we dated, are we?
And like, R2's like, roger, roger.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, the fix is on. Like, R2, and R2 knew he had to go fight Obi-Wan. I love that moment for me. As that, like I said, this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek Duel of Fates. Yeah. Midi-chlorians thing, well defended. And there's just some ties to real science with, like, some other MIDI kind of thing that's actual real thing that Lucas kind of drew upon. I'm not too smart enough to remember it right now, but love the fact that's one of my favorite moments when...
Bail
Organa's like, wipe this one's memory, not that one. He can. I'm like, that means he knew the whole time.
I like the idea that R2 kind of doesn't have the emotional range to cope with what happened, because there's a very short scene in Revenge of the Sith where R2 and 3PO are talking on Mustafar.
Yeah,
and 3PO says something along the lines of, "Well, he has been very stressed lately," and I feel like R2 just turned on like denial protocol. And he's just like, he knows, but he doesn't think about it, and he doesn't talk about it. Because he had to, if he has capacity for emotion, he had to have loved Anakin so much to know what happened to him.
Yeah, it was his droid. Yeah. It was his guy, or he was his droid. So, want to go to some phone calls here really quick? We got some callers on the line here. Jedi Lines here with Joseph Scrimshaw, Mont Garrett, and myself talking about the prequels. Who do we have on the line now?
Tyrone McGraw.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. I'm a big... prequels defender, because someone who hasn't read up on the EU, and I'm 23 now, I haven't seen none of the original trilogies.
Wow.
The prequels really built it up for me. It made me go back and watch the originals, because I saw Darth Vader become Darth Vader. So when I'm watching the originals, I'm like, you know, I've seen this guy. I know why he does what he do.
Mm. Yeah. That's that, you know, and I love that perspective, because I know some people. One of my friends had his wife who was from Japan, and she just didn't grow up. Not that Star Wars isn't all over Japan, actually, but she just hadn't grown up with it. It wasn't in her pop culture landscape. And she saw 1 through 6, and when little Annie became Darth Vader, she cried.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah. Yeah, so I get it. So I appreciate that perspective. You got anything else for Joseph?
You are very well educated in the Star Wars universe, man. Because after that, you know, it made me go read the EU and everything. After I watched the prequels, and then I watched the trilogies, and then I started getting, fixated with it. And I started watching, reading books and novels and all that other stuff. So. Yeah, I appreciate the prequels, and I appreciate the prequels defender.
You've got one here.
And just look, before you go, hey Tyrone, did we meet at the AMC party?
Say what?
Have we met? Are you the same one that I met at the AMC party? I met a Tyrone at the AMC party, and he kept going on and on. They looked like Iggy Azalea.
Oh no, I'm Tyrone McGraw. I haven't met any AMC parties.
Just wanted to clarify.
Well, if there's a Tyrone out there, Maud's looking for you.
Next Star Wars, missed connections.
Tyrone, thanks for calling so much. All right, we got anyone else on the line there? Steven, we got a caller here. You're on Jedi Alliance defending the prequels with Joseph Scrimshaw. Who do we got?
Hey, it's Noah Outlaw from Houston.
Noah runs our Jedi Alliance fan page on Instagram. Noah,
awesome.
I'm sure you got a great question. Go for it.
Okay, my question has to do with the prequels.
Yeah.
Good.
I know Ken saw the trailer for Phantom Menace in the theater.
Yeah.
Whenever you're watching the trailer and you saw Jar Jar for the first time, and you see him after he gets his mouth caught in the pod racer thing, were you caught off guard? Were you nervous about him, or were you just like, whatever, it's Star Wars?
I was, I'll tell you, no, I was so excited. I overlooked it, but I did have some pause, but I was on board. I just, okay, cool. We got a little funny little character with some floppy ears. Sounds good to me. It did stick out to me, but I was so excited of the legend having a beginning and all that kind of stuff. I didn't think much of it until the first scene that he came into.
I was nervous about it, because I think a thing that gets lost is the original trilogy has many corny jokes.
Yes.
And people our age generally felt like the Ewoks are too cutesy and had too many cute little jokes.
Yeah.
So Jar Jar looked like, uh-oh, we got some Ewok stuff in here.
Yeah.
And for me, it was just I hope it's not too much. And like, oh, three quarters of the movie? Too much.
Too much. Too much. Did you pick up at all? Again, a little bit of different generation, but when you saw the trailer, or you knew it was coming, did you know it was coming?
No. I didn't predict that it would be like that.
Okay.
Not at all. I thought it was just like, you know, that one off, that one line, that, you know, that one kind of thing. Agree. Mm-hmm. When you realize it was just, oh, he's still around. Oh, now, he's still talking like that.
I think the biggest thing for me with Jar Jar, which I think went away pretty quickly after Phantom Menace, is I don't like things that relate Star Wars too much to the real universe. So Jar Jar being corny is one thing. Jar Jar saying, excuse me, which at the time was a line popularized by Mike Myers specifically from Saturday Night Live. Like, I do not want Star Wars characters to quote Saturday Night Live.
Great point.
Let's do one more and then we'll start wrapping it up here. Do we have another one on the line there? We got a caller defending the prequels with Joseph Scrimshaw here on Jedi Alliance. Who do you got? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, Hi. You're on.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hey, this is Chris.
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Chris Sanchez.
Hey, Chris.
Pretty good. It's kind of off. It doesn't feel live.
Oh, you alive.
But I just want to ask, do you think we're going to get a Sith movie? And if we do, who do you think they'll focus it on? Do you think they'll create a new Sith?
No, I think Plagueis, if we get a Sith.
Chris, are you talking specifically about a movie like, say, Knights of the Old Republic or something where you get a Revan, Bane, Malak, the type of character? Or are you talking about...
Exar Kun, Kraedanad, anyone from Extended Universe?
I think it's now more than ever possible, obviously. I think they're going to see what they can get based around the original trilogy, if they're going to do spinoffs or the original characters. That heist movie sounds pretty good to me. We'll see. But we'll see. If Kylo Ren, as many think now, with his broadsword lightsaber, kind of is a fan of the Sith, so to speak, in the Old Republic or the ancient Sith stuff, maybe that'll open it up to fans a little bit more. I personally think that the most Star Wars fans, I agree with Joseph, that you don't just watch the movies, but I think the mainstream people who are going to make this a billion-dollar movie don't know anything about expanded universe stuff too much. I don't know. What do you think, Joseph?
Yeah, I agree. I think right now they're so afraid of prequel era in distancing themselves from it. I would love to see a Darth Maul movie or a Darth Plagueis movie or something that connects, but I think right now they're just not going to do anything that connects too directly to the prequels.
Yeah.
So I think it would have to be something that's introduced in these new movies, or maybe something a little bit more Mara Jade-like. That.
Mara Jade, if
they
do that.
Oh, yes, I'd love to see that'd Mara be awesome. Jade.
Chris, what would you like to see in that regard?
Me? I'm a huge Darth Vader fan. Hopefully they kind of put him into this new universe somehow. I don't know how. But that would be pretty cool to see the kind of sort of flashback type of movie. To see how it all started.
I think we're going to get that in Episode 7. There is, it's been confirmed there is a flashback sequence, and I think Vader is going to be in that with Leia.
You think so?
Mm.
Yeah, they got possibly the young...
That would be awesome.
Young Leia coming with Carrie Fisher's daughter cast in that as well. So,
cool.
Thanks for calling, Chris. So, man, this has been a fun... I feel like it's a masterclass.
Really into it.
A masterclass on Star Wars.
Oh,
and you've been
our
visiting professor.
Oh, thank you.
So we're going to hopefully open invitation to come back as well. I'd love to get him on a panel with Mike Black, too, our Jedi Alliance toy expert. And that would be a fun show. Yeah, just go. So it's been great, man. This has been fun. I'm so glad you got to come out today.
One more time, if people want to continue the Star Wars discussion with you, are you on Twitter? Can we plug all of that?
Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, everything is at josephscrimshaw.com. Links to everything from
there. Perfect. Cool.
Right, and he's a very funny man. I just met him at what convention did we last? Kamikaze.
Kamikaze.
You were at a panel with Matt Key and Audrey Kearns. Excellent Geek Girl Authority panel. And this guy's hilarious. He's funny. Please check out his stuff. Read his book, Comedy of Doom. Check out his podcast, Obsessed. Go to josephscrimshaw.com for more. So they can follow your adventures, of course, at geekbomb.net. And Maude Garrett, anything else going on with you right now?
I was sick in bed all week. This is the first day that I blew my nose into a tissue and it wasn't yellow. So, yay!
Yeah, thanks for all your well wishes, fans who saw last week's episode where we had to prop her up like a drunk pod racer found by Qui-Gon.
Hey, Team Toe.
And she survived it. Team Toe.
Team Toe lives on.
Yeah, I'm going to have to Wikipedia that guy.
Please start calling all your drunk friends Team Toe. Way to go, Team Toe.
Hashtag Team Toe. That's great. Of course, me, at Cat Knapsack, and we will be back next week here on Popcorn Talk Network with another fun edition of Jedi Alliance. Don't forget to check out everything. YouTube.com/Popcorn Talk. You got all the shows there. Profiles with Manson Malone, Guilty Movie Pleasures, Meet the Movie Press, Marvel DC News, DC News, and Box Office Breakdown. JT's in the room here now. That show's going strong. Of course, the Schmoes Know main show every Thursday night, 6 p.m. PST. We go live with the big shows there.
Don't forget, we are on iTunes as well. If you rate, review, subscribe, do all of those great things. We want to get back into the list. We want to get in the top 10 for that one. Yeah. We haven't really had much presence on iTunes. So, guys, let's all band together this week and vote and rate and review and make sure that we get that one up there because... Yeah. Yeah, the force is with us, you know?
Follow us at Jedi Alliance SK. We also have an Instagram page, Jedi Alliance. And follow the Popcorn Talk and Schmoes Know. Go to SchmoesKnow.com and PopcornTalkNetwork.com for more information. This has been Jedi Alliance on the Popcorn Talk Network. We talk movies.
And many Bothans died to bring us this information.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Christian Harloff, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit PopcornTalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.